Parshat Toldot. Parshat Toldot is a personal favorite because it's the only parsha that stars Yitzchak, actually. And but the passage I want to look at is one that, in a sense, is part two from something we did last year. Last year in Parshat Chaye Sarah, we took a look, and I shared with you, it was really an observation of Perry and Sternberg in a delightful article about Rivka's point of view. Seeing the story of Rivka's marriage from her point of view, and the alternating use of the word Eved and Ish in describing Avram's slave, which may have misled her into thinking that that was the guy she was marrying. Now notice, just as a preface, that Avraham's slave, whatever his name is, shows up at the well dressed like a wealthy man with camels. He's leading a caravan. He's got lots of gold. She calls him Adoni. He doesn't have a slave brand on him. And the whole time in the conversation, there's at no point is she privy to the conversation where he says who he is and what he's there for. And when she's finally present, they ask her, Hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh. Right? And so the suggestion was made that really the whole time she was being misled into thinking this is her husband, which is why when she saw Yitzchak, she fell off the camel and she said, Miha Isha Lazeh, and Ha'eved says, that's Adoni. So then, as we say, Ha'simon Nofel. So I'd like to pick that up in this week's parsha with something that is, I think, a little startling when you look at it, but again, you got to step back. And one of the critical handicaps we always have to overcome in reading narrative is that we know the end, and as a result of that, we don't catch all the nuances that happen in the middle when things could go different ways. What you have in front of you on page one is the entire narrative of the stolen brachot, which starts at the beginning of Perek Chav Zayin and ends nine psukim into Perek Chav Chet at the end of Parshat Toldot or Seder Toldot. And what I've done is every time that Esav speaks, it's in red. Every time that Yitzchak speaks, it's in blue. Every time Rivka speaks, it's in green. Yaakov, I've done a few different shadings for, and there's reasons for that, as you'll see. So, reading through the story quickly, because you're going to notice something odd, but again, you have to kind of be inside of the story to see it. Right? So now, the narrator tells us that Yitzchak is old and his eyes are getting dim. Okay? Now, that's not the phrase used for about to die. What's the phrase used for about to die that we have in Chumah in Tanakh? Ba'ayamim. We had it with Abraham, we had it with David at the beginning of Malachim, we have it with Yoshua and Yod Gimel. Zachim Ba'ayamim really means like time for putting everything together. Now, by the way, it's very nice, and hineni is a word that we associate with what event? Akedah, and Avram says it to God, Avram says to Yitzchak, Yitzchak says it to, how do you call it? Esav says to Yitzchak, later Yitzchak will say it to Esav. Seems to be some sort of mesorah. You know, you say it to your elder, you say it to the younger. Vayomer, hineni azakanti lo yadati yom moti. Well, what does that mean, lo yadati yom moti? I don't know when I'm going to die, which implies that it might happen any time. Good. So take your tools of hunting. Go out and hunt something. Now, according to Ibn Ezra, we saw this a couple years ago. According to Ibn Ezra, this is because Yitzchak's family is poor and Esav is the source of providing everything, and so it could be he needs the lunch, but the most of the Farshim don't take it that way, and they seem to connect Esav having to go out and hunt and prepare the food with Esav putting in effort to sort of earn this bracha, whatever it may be, in various ways. What does b'terem amut mean? What does the word terem mean?
Close to.
Right, exactly. Just before. And by the way, that's a word that again takes us back to the slave and Rivka. Because in the story of the slave at the well, he gives his prayer, v'ahu hu terem kila l'daber. Means just before he finished speaking, or just almost had finished speaking, Rivka comes out. It's like immediate. So teramut makes it sound like, you know, I'm about to die any minute. So that's what the impression is. All right, Rivka shamad b'nei Yitzchak al Esav b'novay elach Esav asedel etzud tzayid lavi. So Rivka heard this. Rivka amral Yaakov ben alimor. Now the critical piece is the dialogue. And you notice, by the way, this chapter is so filled with dialogue. And we have some very long speeches in this chapter. It's unusual for Tanakh. Usually in Tanakh, narrative is long and dialogue is short. But this is long. So now, what did she say? So what did Rivka change about what she heard? If she heard what we heard, she was listening to Kriyat HaTorah and she heard what Yitzchak said to Esav. So what did she change at this point? So what part of what Yitzchak said did she change or leave out or add? How did Yitzchak introduce the issue? I'm getting old. I don't know when I'm going to die. Leave that out. What else did he tell Esav to do? I'll take your bow and arrow. Okay, that might be unnecessary because it's about what you're going to do. He says, go bring me some game and make good food and I'll eat it. Now watch this. In that phrase, there's two critical differences between what Rivka heard or what Rivka said, if Rivka heard what we heard. So again, first of all, Yitzchak said nothing about God. And Rivka says, Lifnei Hashem. She says that Yitzchak said, Lifnei Hashem. The second thing is, she says, Lifnei Moti. Now, what does Lifnei Moti mean as opposed to Beterem Amut?
In the face of his death.
Well, but Lifnei means, and it's a little play, because Lifnei Hashem means the presence of God. And Lifnei Moti doesn't mean in the presence of death, but what does Lifnei Moti mean? Before I am death, but is which one of them is more immediate? Lifnei or Terem? Terem is like immediate. Lifnei is at some point before I die. Which really casts a whole different shadow on what's going on. Now, as we know, the story plays out, there's a fight over a single bracha. And one of the key lines in this whole thing later on that we'll see is when Esav says, Havaracha chati l'chavi, you only have one bracha. But let's think back to what's going on. What are the two different kinds of brachot that a father would give to his kids? Think, and the best example is Yaakov on his deathbed. And that whole series. What sort of things does Yaakov do?
Arranges his house. Puts his affairs in order.
Puts his affairs in order. That's A. When does he do that? When he feels old age coming on. Then what does he do on his deathbed?
Says his goodbyes.
Then he says goodbyes with an ethical will and an assignment of roles and strengthening every son in the area that they need to be strong in. Yodu ata Yehuda ata Yodu chachacha, Reuven b'choriata, thrown out, etc. Right? That's on the deathbed. But what's the part that's earlier on? Is putting affairs in order. What does Esav think is happening? Because what did Yitzchak say to him? Beterem Amut, which means what kind of bracha is this going to be?
The ethical will.
The ethical will. In the meantime, what did Rivka change? That this is lifnei moti, which means putting affairs in order. Big difference. What's the nature of the bracha of putting affairs in order?
Material.
And I'll give you an example because it's something I've been dealing with for the last couple of years. Is my parents named me the executor of their estate. Right, that's putting your affairs in order. You don't do that in death, but you do that well before. Put everything together, arrange it, and you're in charge. Right? How many executors do you have? You have one. Why do you have one, typically?
So you can get things done.
You have things done, and somebody's got to be in charge. Right? So that is the sort of thing that is singular and is exclusive. We're now coming in with two different concepts of what Yitzchak is about to say. Okay? Why did Rivka make that change? And by the way, what does Lifnei Hashem add to it? If he's giving a bracha Lifnei Hashem, what does that add to it?
A contractor, like an oath.
And therefore?
It's binding.
And therefore it's binding. In other words, whatever bracha is going to be given here, there's no going back on it. Because it's Lifnei Hashem. And therefore, the mindset of Esav here is one thing, and the mindset of Yitzchak, of Yaakov, is a different thing. Now, what does Rivka say? And this is what's remarkable. If you ask the average person on the street, whose idea was the deception? Alex Trebek, what's the Jeopardy question?
Rivka.
Well, you have to phrase it as a question. Who was Rivka, right? Not so clear, but I think you're right, but not so clear. Let's watch. All right? Take a look at how things, again, erasing what we know is going to play out and just watching the story unfold in front of us. Right? So that's what I heard your father say to your brother. Here, now listen to what I tell you. So what does she tell Yaakov to do?
Two
goats from the flock. By the way, this all makes sense. Esav's a hunter, go hunt. Yaakov's a shepherd, go to the flock and get stuff. Okay? And I'll make the nice food. And what'll you do?
Take it to him.
You'll bring it in, he'll eat. So that he... Now, by the way, did she say anything about dress up, disguise your voice, lie about who you are?
No.
No?
Not yet.
Matter of fact, she doesn't. This is what's remarkable. At no point here does Rivka say, okay, go sneak in, pretend you're Esav, and quickly, hurry up before he gets back. She doesn't say that. Watch what happens. Vayomer Yaakov el Rivka imo. What does he say about himself?
He's hairy and I'm not.
Right, which means anybody could feel or see that we're not the same person, which means what is Yaakov either interpreting about or extending Rivka's command to be?
He knows it's supposed to be Esav at this point, but she didn't mention anything about it.
Right. Right, so what does he either add to or interpret about Rivka's command? Rivka only said, bring the food and I'll prepare it, then you go bring it to Father and he'll bless you.
Impersonate.
What? Impersonate. Exactly. Yaakov either understands that Rivka wants him to impersonate and complains, not on ethical grounds, by the way, on practical grounds, or else he takes what Rivka said and extends it further.
Well, she says, I heard him saying this to Esav.
Right. Yeah.
So the logical thing is that he wants to bless Esav.
Or maybe...
Maybe both.
Maybe it's bracha day.
Yeah,
and whoever brings good food will get a bracha. So Esav went hunting. Yitzchak told Esav to go hunting. I'm telling you to go to the flock and I'll make nice food. You get a bracha too. Why not? Except for that word, lifnei moti, changes everything. Right? But yet, what does Yaakov say? Ooh, I'm not the same body feel. Ulayim usheni aviv hayiti ve'einav kim ta'ateah. The father may feel me, may embrace me. And I will be like a deceiver. Veviti, I like alive. Lo bracha. Now, veviti, by the way, is a key word in this whole story. I won't belabor this, but lahavi is a key word. She says, "Bring me the food." Yitzchak says, "Bring me the food." Right? And what does Yaakov say? I'm going to bring upon myself a curse. Okay, and it plays throughout the text. All right. So now, what happens here? Vatomer lo imo alai kilatcha b'ni. All right. So she says that I'll take the curse away. However, we interpret that, what that means. What does Rivka not say at this point? She doesn't say, oh no, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean impersonate. Which means that either this is what she wanted Yaakov to do, but this is why I titled this plausible deniability. Right? Very popular term these days. Ever since really the Clinton era. Is that she could say, I never told him to dress up. She didn't. But she led him that way, and he picked it up on his own. All right? Notice, she doesn't say what she wants him to do, but she leads him in that direction, and he picks it up on his own. This should, of course, remind us of how the whole Rivka story starts. And we're going to see a full circle here. All right. So he does everything he's supposed to. Skip to the next thing. Now notice, I put it in shades because Yaakov is pretending to be Esav. All right, so I'll put it in a different shade. And now, by the way, again, Yitzchak says Hineni to his son. Before he said, Esav said it to his father, Yitzchak says it to his son, Mi ata b'ni. Now that's a little of a strange thing, because his father, the son walks in, and he says, Avi, so the father should right away say, you're Yaakov, because he knows the voice. Mi ata b'ni, maybe Yaakov is just not that common of a visitor to Yitzchak, middle of the day, we'd be working. Vayom Yaakov Aviv, Anochi Esav Bechoracha. We know this one. Asiti, sorry about the print. Kasher Dibarta Elai Kumna Shva V'Yochla Mitzedi V'Avur Tavarcha Ninafshecha. So what did he say? I'm Esav. I come from the hunt. Here's the food. Come and eat it so that you will bless me. Right? V'Yitzchak Abno Mazem Mihartal Nitzobini. What's Yitzchak's big surprise here? How did you get here so fast? Vayom Kikra Adonai V'Echal Fanai. God, help me out, one way or the other. Okay? So now, what happens over the next few psukim? There's all this Yitzchak being a little bit suspicious. come here, let me embrace you, let me feel you, and nonetheless, Yitzchak goes ahead and gives him the bracha. Interestingly, what kind of bracha does Yitzchak actually give? He does not give a deathbed bracha. He gives the putting you in charge of the estate bracha. Which means, what was Yitzchak really having in mind, which by the way was accurate? I'm not about to die. And so I'm putting my affairs in order. And in reality, Chazal say that Yitzchak is 123 at the time. But either way, there's a long time before he's going to die. Because after this point, Yaakov's going to run away. Yaakov's going to be gone for at least 20 years. Mm-hmm. Going to come back, and Yitzchak's still alive. So Yitzchak's got another 20 plus years to live, if not way more than that. So that's all there. So, so the question is, so Yitzchak evidently intended really to make this a bracha that's going to put somebody in charge of the estate, which is kind of the way Rivka described it. And so eventually, what does he do? He gives this bracha, v'yiten lecha Elohim et al ha'shamayim shmonei haaretz, which puts one son in front of in the estate. And by the way, the other son is going to become a slave, which is wittingly or unwittingly a fulfillment of the prophecy to Rivka, Rav Yavod Sair. So this is putting the estate, you, son, thinking it's Esav, are going to take over the estate. You're going to be in charge. Your brother is subservient to you. You have all the power. You have all the wealth, etc. Okay, great. Now, Esav comes in afterwards. What's Esav's reaction? And this is where Esav sort of, there's a doesn't get it here. Esav comes in, brings the stuff. What's Yitzchak's reaction? He gets very scared. He says, somebody else came and took your bracha. What do you mean, take my bracha? What does that mean? And if you think about it, from our perspective, it's very bizarre. Took my bracha. Years ago, I remember, this is after you guys, but some point in between when you guys were in my class and now, you know, I always honor good questions. So one of the kids in class asked a good question. I said, you want 30 points extra credit? Of course. I said, okay, look up these two Rambams and get back to me by email tonight and tell me what the answer is in the Rambam. Right? About 10 minutes later, another kid asked a really good question. It was just one of those good days. I said, you want 30 points extra credit? I said, okay, there's a Sforno and a Ramban on that. Please look them up and get back to me tonight. And there was a kid sitting there, I'll still remember. His eyes bugged open. He said, how many points do you have? I was like, no, sorry, infinite, really. That's up to me. Sorry if you're listening now. But you know, that's kind of Esav's point. You know, like, what do you mean only one bracha? And so what is Yaakov's answer? It's the one with the shade. Ba achicha bimirma vayikach birchatecha. Your brother came with trickery. And mirma, of course, is a word that we most associate with Lavan, but if you think about it, it should be most prominently associated with Shimon Levi, because that's really where it's used. Right? They come with trickery. So he came with trickery and he took your bracha. And Esav's response is a little midrash shame. Oh, that's why he's called Yaakov. Vayaakveni zefamayim. He ambushed me twice. Different meaning of Akev. First he took my bechora, which who knows if Yitzchak knows about that. No, he took my bracha, and then he said, halo atzalteli bracha, you should give me a bracha. So what's Yitzchak's answer? Well, no, not exactly. He's in charge of you. But you're going to be a warrior, and in case he pushes down too hard, you'll be able to overthrow his yoke. Not much of a bracha. It's a little of a mishaberach. Right? But then at the end, Esav says, havaracha hi achat l'chavi, barcheni gamani avi. And he weeps. Well, give me a bracha too. Now, from Esav's perspective, evidently he thinks that Yitzchak is dying and therefore he should be giving bracha to all his kids. But what does he find out has happened? This really wasn't that scene. Which maybe Yitzchak deliberately misled Esav into thinking it's an urgent thing by saying B'terem Amut, so he would hurry up. But really, it's a putting my affairs in order thing. And it is Lifnei Hashem. And therefore, Yaakov is the man. He's in charge. Now let's roll back a second to figure out why that's the case. Why doesn't Yitzchak just turn around and say, oops, I got fooled, doesn't count, we'll do a do-over? So let's ask this more basic question. This is really parenthetic to the shir, but critical for this parsha. Why does Yitzchak want to give Esav the control of the estate?
more similar to Avram.
Well, control of the estate goes to whom?
Older.
It doesn't go to the more religious. Doesn't necessarily go to the older.
Well, we discussed that by this.
It goes to the one who's most capable of controlling, of taking care of the estate. What did we hear about way at the beginning? Why did Yitzchak favor Esav? Because Tzayid V'fiv, he can provide. So he said, yeah, Yaakov's a good, firm boy, and he should get the bracha of Abraham, which is what he gives him. And he should be the one to really continue the tradition. But as far as the estate goes, that's Esav. And this will connect very much with the heart and soul of the shiur. What makes Esav the better provider? His ability to hunt. And he's Yodea Tzayid, which means he knows strategy. Okay? But if there's somebody who is successfully able to impersonate Esav and also hunt, doesn't that make that person even more capable than Esav? So here Yaakov was somehow able to bring the food and even impersonate Esav. This Ish Tam has become a Yodea Tzayid. So Yitzchak at that point turns around and says, well, you know what? He earned that bracha because he showed he's got what it takes to get it. So I'm not going to give it back. And your place is really to be subservient to him. Okay. What's the result of all of this? And I think this was the plan from the beginning. What was the result of this? So take a look at the red background, right? Yomer Esav Belibo, Yikrevu Yimei Evel Aviv Argat Yaakov Achi. By the way, what does Esav still think is happening? He still thinks father's about to die. The father's about to die. I'll wait till he dies, then I'll kill Yaakov. He's got to wait a long time. Right? But that's what he says. And now, Rivka hears this. What? That's what he thinks. That's what he says to his heart. Rivka hears this, and she says, Hinei Esav Achicha Minei Echem L'chal Hargecha. Right, he's planning to kill you. By the way, you got to get out of Dodge. So where should you go? I don't know, but you're living in Beersheba. I think the best choice is Mitzrayim. Seems to be where everybody runs away when they're in trouble. Or Grar. Instead, what does she say? Oh, you're in trouble, you better go to Haran. That's a little bit of a strange response. You're going to run all the way to Haran, which is probably a several-week trip at best, at least, and stay there for a few days. Maybe a little while. A few days. Until Esav calms down. And then I'll summon you from there, which she never does. Then she comes to Yitzchak, and the only words she ever hears us saying, we ever hear her saying to Yitzchak are, Katzti v'chayai m'nei b'not chet. I apologize again for the print. Rivka says, I can't stand my daughters-in-law. If Yaakov marries one of the local girls, I'll put my head in the oven.
This is the only thing that Rivka ever says.
That's the only thing we ever hear said to Yitzchak.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, what does Yitzchak do? Yitzchak turns around and makes an understandable move, which is, he tells Yaakov to go to Mavan. Why is that an understandable move? Because that's exactly what happened to him. He said, he goes to go to Lavan. I know that he has daughters. You marry his daughters. Okay, very good. I'll turn the page a second. Yaakov arrives in Haran. What does Yaakov look like when he arrives in Haran? Looks like a beggar. He's coming by foot. All he has is a stick with him. We hear about that in Vayishlach. He looks like a beggar. And what's the operative word of his relationship with Lavan? It shows up 7 times in this parsha. Va'avaratani chinam. Va'ya'avodimo. Va'avarato asher tavodimi. Va'avoda asher tavodimi. The word is Eved. He arrives as an Eved. Who is he really? He's really head of the family. Let's go back, because who engineered this entire thing? Rivka. How did Rivka's story start? A man arrived at the well in Haran looking like a master and was really an Eved. And she was misled. Nobody ever said, you're not marrying him, but it certainly looked like she was marrying him. Because nobody ever told her you're marrying him. They didn't lie to her. But on the other hand, they have all the reason to believe she's marrying him. She goes off with him to marry him into the sunset, and then arrives in Rosh Hashanah to find out he's just a slave. What has Rivka now coordinated? Full circle. And now my son, who's really the man, is going to come looking like a slave, arriving in the same place, going to end up as an eved there, and ultimately will marry. Now this component ends up in the family because Rivka and then Lavan bring it in, and as a result of Lavan bringing it in, what happens in the family? Yaakov marries Leah instead of Rachel, and then there's all of this subterfuge that goes on within the family that ends up, of course, in Mechirat Yosef. Which takes us back all the way to the very beginning of the Rivka story. Is that our entire history, which is the big building blocks of our history, are Yetziat Mitzrayim. She wouldn't be trying to Yetziat Mitzrayim, all really start with that scene by the well. And then the next stop in that development is the nevuah given to Rivka, Shnei Goyim Mevinechu, Shnei Lomim Ma'achi Paredu, which evidently she never tells Yitzchak. And all of this mirmah becomes true. So now the bottom line question is, well, that's terrible. It's all deception. And it's all, like I said, deniable, plausible deniability. Sorry. Thank God I don't know the term too well. In which you say something, but you don't say the whole thing and let the other people kind of be misled by what you've done. The question is deception always bad or always unethical? So usually we'd say it is. And you've got to be honest, you've got to be up forthright. And certainly when it comes to business, things of that sort, you've got to be upright. But what you see coursing through Sefer Bereshit is that deception as a tool against the stronger is acceptable. Several examples of where that plays out. And the most powerful example, of course, is Shechem. Here we are, a small family, basically of relatively young kids, in a town in which the lord of the town has taken our sister, and we can't oppose him. And so we use deception in order to gain the upper hand. And it's something that really courses through the stories. It's not the ethical high road, but sometimes you can't afford the ethical high road. And so survival depends on taking something which is acceptable but not ideal. It's something that you see in the Rivka story. Because Rivka herself starts out as a tool. And she doesn't have any choice in this matter. And when she says, Hatechi im ha'isha zeh, she says, Eilech. Meaning, you want to go with this man? Wink, wink, your husband. Doesn't say that, but that's what it sounds like. And she goes with him. And then ultimately it turns out that he's only a slave and some other guy she's married. Who, by the way, she never really communicates with. Notice that. She talks to the slave more than she talks to Yitzchak in the Chumash.
He's misachik.
What?
It says in misachik, or like that they definitely communicated.
We don't hear any words. You're right. I'm not saying they didn't have an intimate relationship. They had two kids. I'm not saying that they weren't friendly with each other. But communication, as you can see here, the only communication that ever takes place between the two of them is deception. That's just right there in the text. And she's much more communication with Avram's slave in the text. I'm not saying about what happened in real life. We don't know what happened in real life. There's lots of conversations we're not told about. But the conversations that are recorded, that's what we have. And it seems to all start with that. And what this is Rivka never says to Yaakov, dress up like Esav. Rivka says enough for Yaakov to then take that and move ahead exactly like was done to her about who she was going to marry. And that piece continues. She doesn't tell Yitzchak, I want Yaakov to go to Haran. What does she tell him? If he marries a local girl, I'm going to kill myself. I want to die. Lama li chayim. Yitzchak draws the conclusion that sends him to Haran. And the entire circle is completed when Yaakov arrives in Haran. And then another whole circle starts up, which of course leads us to Shiva Mitzrayim.
Why do we know this? What's the purpose of it?
Because the reality is that there are powerful people and powerless people. Right? Rivka in this story is the powerless person on paper. Mm-hmm. And her ability to equal the... balance the power is through deception. Okay? You think about, even Yaakov in his interactions with Esav later on. He's not forthright with Esav. Esav comes with 400 men, and Yaakov's got some pregnant women there, and pregnant animals and all that. He can't move. So what does Yaakov say? I'll catch up with you. Well, he doesn't. He doesn't. Rivka does the same thing. I'll call you in a few days, in a little while. Never hear from Rivka. Because that's the acceptable tool, not again the ideal tool, but the acceptable tool when you are the disempowered one. As by the way, something that we've used throughout history. Subterfuge, misdirection, all that kind of stuff was a staple of the Haganah playbook. Mm-hmm. Right? It was a staple of the Chashmonaim's playbook. Hanukkah's coming up.
Call it Adam Kozim.